and welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast. I'm Liz Loza. As always, I am joined by Matt Harmon, who will help me recap five of the most interesting NFL games from Sunday afternoon. And, of course, we'll preview the Monday night matchup. Matt, any overriding themes you noticed while watching the games today?
I would say that I feel the overriding theme of the entire NFL is just that there's not that much separation between teams, right? We've been talking about that basically all year, that it seems like it's an every week league where, like, this team, you know, you feel like they're kind of unstoppable. I mean, the damn Rams have lost like 3 weeks in a row. The 49ers are surging right now. The Bills and Patriots are kind of right neck and neck in terms of the AFC. So there's all that. And I also kind of feel like it's bleeding into fantasy a little bit. It feels like there are so very, very few this year, like, set it and forget it players. I don't know. Maybe I am just kind of missing players in my mind or whatever. But, you know, even a guy like Najee Harris today, who we, I don't know if we're going to dive deep on that game, because it was an absolute blowout by the Bengals. But, like, that's a guy who it's just like, but the volume. The guy gets like 37 scoreless yards today against the Bengals. It's like, even a guy like that, you know, those games are going to happen for everybody, but still, it feels like in terms of just set it and forget it, you have no doubts that this guy's going to come through for you every single week. There's like maybe a handful of players like that, and it feels like that's also the case in the actual real life NFL.
Well, Christian McCaffrey is another example of that. Oh, yeah. This particular week, right? Like 35 rushing yards, and I think
set it and sweat it. That's CMC's like, set it and sweat it.
Hashtag that, friend. I think also what I'm hearing, like, we always hear about the parity in the NFL, right? And that's a big thing. And it does feel like this year, I mean, Andy opened a podcast last week saying, like, well, I used to think I knew by this double digit weeks of the season what was going on, but I don't. And I also feel like it's not just, you know, every year we say, like, are the injuries this year worse? Don't they just feel worse? I think it's also, and I'm curious, I mean, this is just, I'm brainstorming, but because so much money is tied up into big name players, there's so little depth. And so when you're dealing from a fantasy perspective, the way that bleeds in with a team like Tennessee, are you going to throw a dart at Nicholas Westbrook-Ikhine, who, like, scores a touchdown but catches two balls this week? Is that what you're really, or right. We talked about Rex Burkhead, right, on FFL, and David Johnson, who looks like dust. So it does feel like what you're scrounging for, you have always in fantasy been taught, and for good reason, to avoid. Like, you don't mess with a mess because it's not going to be fruitful. And now you're sort of like, well, I have to, and maybe I'll get lucky with Kendrick Bourne, or, and I do think there was some analysis to Kendrick Bourne, but, you know, maybe I'll get lucky with Nicholas Westbrook-Ikhine. But when guys like, when Jeff Swaim is not active and you're like, huh, I got to factor that in, stuff's awry, stuff's amiss, you know?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. The lack of depth is interesting there. And it's just, yeah, it seems like this year more than ever we're, and I maybe, again, it's maybe the same thing with the injuries where it is this way every year, but it just feels like we're talking about goofballs like all the time, you know, in these like start sit questions early in the morning. It's like, I don't really want to tell you to start Dontrell Hilliard.
I was getting mad. Could you tell? We were all getting irritated.
Yeah, it's like the same thing with Donta Foreman last week. I'm on this, it's like, why are we talking about Donta Foreman? And like, every freaking question, it's like, I don't even feel bad if a guy like Dontrell Hilliard goes and like pops off and I told you not to play him, because it's like, how can you feel, it's freaking Dontrell Hilliard, you know? Like, if I misanalyze, like, Cam Newton, I feel bad about, like, telling, and I mean, what are you going to do? It's not my fault that he goes out there and plays poorly, right? But, like, at the same time, it's like, man, I feel bad about that one. Like, that's just I should have projected this, and that. But, like, some of these guys that we're talking about, this, it's just, it's tough. And it's not like, I'm not trying to sit here and be like, oh, boo-hoo, Matt and Liz. Like, that's not at all what I'm saying. It's just, it's a difficult year to play fantasy, I think, this year more than ever, because of the lack of just like set it and forget it guys, and the fact that you do have to consider these players in your flex spot potentially. It's also like, I actually kind of feel like, in a way, Liz, I know we're so off the beaten path at this point, but I tell people every year, like, this is basically how fantasy football is, where usually, and this is anecdotal evidence, don't come at me with the numbers, like, usually there's one team that's just like absolutely crushing it, right? You know, at this point it's like 8-2 or something, you know, they've been on a dominant run. And then there's like the teams that just have no shot, Like they're dead in the water. But then there's this big group in the middle there from like 2 to 7 or two to eighth place that is right around 500, one game above, one game below, that still realistically has a shot to make like the fantasy playoffs, you know. And those are the ones that are churning through these like Dontrell Hilliard, Nick Westbrook Akina or whatever. And that feels like the entire NFL. Like there's all these groups like in the middle. So maybe in a weird way, the two worlds are blending more than
are
we
colliding.
Think.
Correct.
Yeah, worlds are colliding, Jerry.
It is interesting in my deeper leagues. Like everybody has the same record within one or two of each other. Like it's a two win or two loss swing in either direction. And we're all sort of like looking at point totals. That's why last week, we're off. I had to email Scott Fish and be like, I just want the points from Colt McCoy. I know I'm going to lose, but just give me the points because it's going to matter next week when I don't lose. Anyway, if we're going to talk about losing, we have to talk about the Colts because after such a dominant win, they fell to the Bucks, who were not having any of it. But as predicted, one thing we all got right was that this was going to be a high-scoring game because when you have two solid run defenses and two rather generous secondaries, then you get a little bit of a fireworks experience. And indeed, that was what we got. Although Tom Brady only passed for one touchdown. It was Leonard Fournette who, forget a hat trick, he did that on the ground and then added another one through the air. We've been telling people to ride Lenny all year. So this shouldn't be, this of course is a surprise because it's a career outing for him, but it shouldn't be so much of a surprise that you started him.
Right. It was a little, I guess people probably got a little spooked that there was some Ronald Jones usage in the scoring area last week against the Giants, you know.
That was to keep Lenny fresh for this nonsense.
I agree, right? For an actual competitive game. And look, for the Colts, it's almost like there's no shame in losing this game, you know, because 24-14.
From Pittman, I'm going to have myself go ahead.
We'll get there. But like in the grand scheme of things, you're up 24-14 in the first half on this team, you know. And by the way, like they didn't do in the first half, it was basically all like Wentz in the passing game, you know. Like Jonathan Taylor really didn't have that game, like that drive. Finishes with 97 total yards and a touchdown on 20 touches, but a lot of that came as you know, you're gassed in the third quarter. Jonathan Taylor finally starts to get going there, but before that it was mostly Wentz to the pass game, 3 first half touchdowns. This is a pretty good football team. The Colts have a pretty good football team. Yeah. The problem is just it is the boogeyman of 2 Wentz interceptions, you know. Eventually, it's not great when the quarterback is the boogeyman, right? That like he could show up at any moment and like strangle out the hope of this team, but still.
Well, I do think that Frank Reich is like, he is just designing incredible plays and he's got the skill position pieces, right? Despite the 2 early drops from Pittman, which were rather uncharacteristic. This is a guy who's reaching double digit targets. He's proven his alpha status as a receiver. Obviously, we love Jonathan Taylor, right? Forget the excuses about the line in Wisconsin. He has proven himself. But
superstar, yeah.
The it factor does not belong to Carson Wentz. And when it is the most important position in football, you know, and if you don't have that piece, it's evidence of why these guys get paid so much, why they continue to sign these contracts. And then it all trickles down to the situation we opened the show with, right? And he just doesn't have he's not a difference maker in tight games like this. Well, he is, but in the negative way.
Agree. And you brought up the point of Leonard Fournette, and like Tom Brady doesn't have a big statistical passing game, 226 yards on 34 attempts, 1 touchdown, 1 pick. But like, this is how you beat like a cover 2, you know, there's all this talk about cover 2 defenses and Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, they can't figure it out. The Colts are like as hardcore old school Tampa 2 as it gets in terms of their defensive scheme. And what do you know, a guy like Tom Brady, who is, you know, ancient, he's seen like the first iteration of Tampa 2 like dominating the NFL, and now like, you know, the cover 3 Seattle defense comes in vogue, and now it's back to the cover 2 stuff here. Brady has seen all this stuff. You look at the box score in this one, and it was apparent watching the games. You know, Chris Godwin, Mike Evans basically do nothing in this game. Mike Evans, 3 catches for 16 yards. Chris Godwin, 4 catches for 24 yards. They tried like a couple deep shots to Scotty Miller to the point where it's like, what are we doing here, Tom? Come on, enough with that already. But you know, Rob Gronkowski, 7 catches. Leonard Fournette, 7 catches. Cameron Brate, three catches. That was 17 of Tom Brady's 25 completions there. Like, that's how you beat a defense like this, is you dink and dunk and you dink and dunk. And nobody's been better at dinking and dunking than Tom Brady over the years.
Yeah.
Surgical stuff. And also, obviously, it helped that Leonard Fournette ran the, and the Bucs, by the way, from like an EPA per rush attempt perspective, have been like top five at running the ball all season. So they have the bones there to just like, and that's why, like, don't panic about Godwin, don't panic about Evans. This was just a matchup based type of thing. You know, these guys are going to have their big games, but like, this was definitely a matchup where, okay, we're not going to push the ball deep, because that's what you do as a defensive perspective. You take that away, we'll just establish the hell out of the run and dink it and dunk it with guys like Rob Gronkowski and guys like Leonard Fournette.
The Bucs did, we've talked about their defense becoming more and more shallow as they took on more and more injuries. Jamal Dean, the cornerback, got banged up in this one. I think he's dealing with a shoulder injury. Devin White, that's a big potential loss. Linebacker left the game with a hip injury, but, you know, the stars sometimes align, and they often align for Tom Brady, because in week 13, he's traveling to the Falcons. So I think if you were going to miss some playmakers on defense, this would be the week to take your chances.
Yeah, pretty juicy spot there.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's move ahead to Tom's old team, the Patriots, and the run they have been on. They are the number two seed behind Baltimore. Obviously, the Ravens will play later. They're playing actually tonight while we're recording. This is the Patriots' sixth win in a row, and they really handed it to the Titans, as we expected, 36-13.
Yeah, and this game was pretty close at halftime. It was 19-13, I think, at the half. So this was a situation where, you know, I was pretty surprised that it was that close. Yeah, let me look at this just so I'm actually accurate here. Yeah, it was 16-13, Patriots-Titans at the half. And I was kind of surprised by that. I was talking about that on our Sportsbook Live show, where it was like, wow, I expected the Patriots to boat race the Tennessee Titans. Eventually, that's what happened.
We got there.
I mean, but it's just like, what are you going to do if you're Tennessee? Like, they get their running backs involved, 100 yards for Dont'a Foreman, 100 yards for Hilliard. I have no idea what to do with that situation. Both those guys lose a fumble too, by the way. Who knows? And like Neato, you get your running backs over 100 yards. You don't get your quarterback over 100 yards. You lose this game. It's not a competitive game. And I don't know what to do if you're Tennessee in the passing game. You know, Julio Jones is on IR. AJ Brown is on IR. You're literally thrown to the preseason squad here. I mean, look at the names that caught passes for Tennessee. It's unbelievable. Nobody gets more than 25 yards. Your guy, Nick Westbrook-Ikhina there, who also gets the touchdown. So that's it. That's your leading receiver on the day. 25 yards from NWI.
Well, when you're thinking about the matchup and when we're projecting it, you know, the old adage. And again, some of these things sound trite, but they have value because there's been enough data to support them. What's the thing that Bill Belichick is going to take away? Well, it's Ryan Tannehill. And it's not tough to do right now. And so he was able to do that. By the way, I think the New England defense ended up with 14 fantasy points. So people paid up for it in DFS. Well done. Mac Jones, meanwhile, is managed a YPA of 9.6, almost a 72% completion percentage, 2 touchdowns, 0 turnovers. Andy Behrens, again, said this on last week's pod, and I have been repeating it as I'm fielding questions from all over, like, fantasy fandom at my Thanksgiving table with friends. Why is Mac Jones on fire? And I am quoting Andy Behrens by saying the thing he does best is not make any mistakes. Like, that doesn't offer much upside for fantasy, but in real life, particularly for a rookie, for a really green player, relatively speaking, he's not pulling a Carson Wentz. He seems to have this processing ability, this cerebral type of play where he just doesn't brain fart. And that's showing up in the number of wins, even if they're not high scoring affairs, at least from a passing perspective.
Yeah, I mean, it's not surprising that Mac Jones is playing the best football among the rookies for a couple of different reasons. Because one, like, what was the note out of his scouting report? It was just like, oh, he's very smart, accurate. Like, he's probably a pretty pro-ready guy, right? And number two, he's on easily the best team of these rookies. I mean, Trey Lance aside, because Trey Lance is not playing. But, like, obviously the Patriots had some holes in their roster.
The skill position players. Like, the excuse made for Cam Newton all last week was like, well, look at the receivers he had. Mac Jones got the same ones.
Not really. I mean, they invested in Nelson Aguilar.
You were talking about Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry?
Well, Hunter Henry's been like scoring touchdowns like it's his job. Kendrick Bourne finally getting involved here has actually been playing extremely well for these guys. No, I mean, I'm not taking it, but also I think from like an offensive line perspective, you look at what Trevor Lawrence is dealing with. You look, and this is only, this is a recent development. Sure. You know, yeah, Justin Fields is dealing with even Zach Wilson in New York. Zach Wilson's got his own problems, but like, you know, that's a whole other thing. It's also just like from an ecosystem perspective, you know, the corpo buzzword ecosystem, you know, this is a Bill Belichick, Josh McDaniels. We know who the F we are and we can go out and do this whole thing. That's what the Patriots are. You know, these other teams. The Jets, the Jags. I feel so bad for Jags fans. Like, this should be the year you have hope. You have no hope. You have absolutely no hope right now. Anyways, but like, they have no idea what they're doing over there. The Patriots know what they're doing. They could drop a guy like a high floor player like Mac Jones in and get some steady play. But, you know, credit to him. I think he has cut out mistakes. I think having great offensive line play in front of him has been great for him. It's been great for the run game. I don't know how much to trust of the skill position guys. Kendrick Bourne has put up some pretty good numbers lately, scores twice in this game, made some downfield plays. Jacoby Myers also popped up for 98 yards and a career high 19 yards per catch. So some of that downfield ability is popping up in this offense, which would be a legit game changer from a fantasy angle, but I don't know how much you could really trust that.
Bourne has been the most consistent in terms of regular targets. He's not been, you know, leading the receiving core in snaps or routes run, frankly, heading into this. But every week, you know, he's going to get, he's been on average seeing about four looks. There was a week seven glow up against the Chargers where I think he drew seven looks. So that kind of inflated his weekly average. But I also feel like when you looked at this matchup, if anybody, and this is as a Bears fan, if you see a team adding Buster Screen, you're going to start the opposing offense's receiver. Like, that is it. Things are so bad that you're adding Buster Screen, who, by the way, was added to, like, San Francisco and then cut within the first, month of the season.
Yeah, no, Buster Screen is definitely one of those guys. Him and old Bleedy Ray Wilson. Like, if you've been playing DFS for the last, like, 6 years or something, we've been picking on those guys for a long time. And hey, here in 2021, when we're talking about like, should I start Devonta Freeman or Rex Burkhead? Well, at least we still know some guys are still targets.
Totally. Last note about the Patriots, because we did receive a lot of questions about this backfield. Ramondre Stevenson, 9 carries. Damian Harris, 11 carries. They both manage 40 yards, but it's Harris that falls into the end zone and gets the tub. And then in the passing game, they both draw one target apiece. So we are looking at a backfield split, an equitable share between the two. And I just feel like whoever has the rhythm is probably going to be the one who gets the advantage.
Yeah, I mean, the carry numbers are so similar. Again, one target for each of them. It's right. Who scores the touchdown, basically. Yeah, that's like exactly what I said with Damian Harris as my off his game player on FFL this morning. It's like, you're just banking on a touchdown. Well, good job. You got it this week, but that's what you're looking for here.
I think that might be the perfect segue if we're talking about an RBBC to our next game, which is the Chargers at Mile High. And let's start with Melvin Gordon and Javonte Williams. It is Javonte Williams this week who scores the touchdown, though previously Melvin Gordon has been leading in that category at 7 heading into this game in total, I believe, 5 on the ground and 2 through the air. He does lead the backfield in terms of rushing yards and carries, 17 for 83, Williams 14 for 54. They both rip off long runs. Williams gets a long run for 12, Gordon gets a long run for 16, but it is Javonte Williams who draws more looks through the air, converting 3 of 4 for 57, Melvin Gordon only 1 catch for 5 yards, 2 targets.
Yeah, I like that for Javonte Williams, that receiving usage, mostly because I used him in our DFS contest.
I know. I used Gordon and you just barely edged me out. I really liked the side note. Like, we had him on Eckler's Edge. He was absolutely wonderful, so generous, was doing the interview with nothing to promote. And you got, when a player comes on to talk fantasy in particular and doesn't have anything to promote, that is a good guy. Facing his old team, obviously history with Austin and the Chargers organization at his new stadium. I was like, you know what? I don't care. He's so cheap. I'm flexing him. Fine.
Well, listen. Also, you got out of here with some good fortune too, because it looked like he had a hip injury.
Yeah.
Early on as well. So yeah, I mean, this was basically very similar. It's like, which of these guys is going to score the touchdown? Williams scores the touchdown. Had it gone the other way, at the exact same DFS salary, you would have been feeling pretty good about Melvin Gordon. But yeah, the receiving usage was pretty nice to see. It remains impossible, speaking of receiving usage, to start any of these Broncos receivers. I mean, nobody gets more than 26 yards. That was Tim Patrick on 3 targets. Cortland Sutton has gone from like, wow, Cortland Sutton leads the NFL in air yards, to you can't start Cortland Sutton in fantasy ever since basically Jerry Jeudy came back. And this was my concern with these guys going into the year, which is just, it's still a Teddy Bridgewater led offense. Like, that was adorable what happened with the Panthers last year, but that's because like they had a horrible defense last year where they had to throw the ball all the time. Teddy Bridgewater has 18 attempts in this game. Like, that ain't gonna cut it when you've got Cortland Sutton, Tim Patrick, Jerry Jeudy, and Noah Fant all to support, whilst also getting other players like bit guys involved. Like, that's the bigger problem too, is that in Carolina it was Robbie Anderson, DJ Moore, Curtis Samuel, and Chris McCaffrey or Mike Davis, and that's it. But you've got guys in Denver like the running backs. You've got Albert O. You know, even Kendall Hinton pops up every now and again. Like, there's just too many good players in Denver for this offense to support.
Teddy Bridgewater was in and out of this game with a knee injury, so that might have affected something. Though he did save his fantasy line with a rushing touchdown, which in retrospect feels like maybe it wasn't the best idea. But there we go. You know, they're just, I have to imagine, I love looking at the money sometime in retrospect, like when contracts are signed in season, because then we don't have all of this like time to mull them over in the off season and try to like really chew on something that may or may not exist. But like, they pay Tim Patrick, they pay Cortland Sutton, they both get 2 catches. Jerry Jeudy catches 2 balls, even though he was only $14 in DFS. And a lot of people were like, hey, the value. Well, it doesn't always work out. So now we know that probably Teddy Bridgewater is just kind of keeping the position under center warm for a slew of rumors heading into next season. Rumored replacements.
I know it continues to feel disrespectful to like talk about the future with the Broncos. Is they're like, hey guys, we're still beating teams here in 2021. Like, we're still competitive. You know, at this point, their record is right there with all these teams that we're talking about. You know, they're 6-5. They're right there with all of these other teams, but it does feel like they're loading up for a run at a veteran quarterback for sure.
Let's talk about Justin Herbert, not his finest outing. He did pass for over 300. If you look at the stat line and you don't look at the completions versus the attempts, and you see, he passed for over 300 yards, 2 touchdowns. You go a little bit further. Oh, there's 2 really costly picks. Patrick Surtain had an incredible game, 1 in the end zone, 3 sacks for, 18 yards total. I admittedly feel very close to this team. I also have a very difficult time projecting them week after week, because if we're talking about a topsy-turvy, like there was a couple of weeks ago where I was like, well, Brandon Staley clearly believes that the best player on the team is Justin Herbert, and so he's going to give the offense to Justin to just put on his shoulders and ride. And then a game like this happens.
Yeah, and like last week it was, oh man, as good as Justin Herbert could possibly look. You know, like literally breaking records in terms of rushing yards and passing yards that he put up. And, he just looks like it was just a bad game by Justin Herbert. And he's had a couple of these moments of late, minus 2.1 completion percentage adjusted for expectation there. It was not just a not ideal game for Justin Herbert. It's one of those games where it's like, what do you really say other than like this guy just didn't play well? Like, I watched most of this game and it just was not a good outing for him. I do think some of the offensive line injuries have become a problem for the Chargers. They're not getting the pass protection that they ideally would have liked for Herbert, but still, it does feel like an offense that when you take away what they want to do, they don't really necessarily have a plan B. They can't really play left-handed. That I think is a problem.
I agree. For fantasy though, you're still starting Keenan Allen. He draws 10 looks. You're not upset about that. Austin Eckler doesn't clear 100 total yards, but he comes pretty darn close, and he finds the end zone. What does he have, like about 70 total? No, more than that, 70. Oh, he does clear 100 total yards. Austin Eckler clears 100 total yards. He finds the end zone. That's pretty much what you're going to expect or project for him every week. So Mike Williams fell flat. Well, congratulations. Last week, he got a gift before Thanksgiving. Let's move on. This is a fun game. The 49ers and the Minnesota Vikings. I know that you started Jimmy Garoppolo in DFS. I wrote about him and he led my sleepers piece. For a minute there, though, I was like, oh, God, if Debo is just going to run it the whole time and Jimmy's not going to throw, there's no need to let Jimmy throw. Then I don't know. Thankfully, Kirk Cousins was able to, you know, see his old play caller, his mentor. There was definitely a bromance between he and Kyle, the K and the K back in the day. And he mustered up that moxie and thankfully was able to do that so that San Francisco could answer.
Yes. Kept this game close, kept this game. Well, I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo definitely was the one kind of, well, not Jimmy Garoppolo as a sole entity, but the 49ers offense did continue to push it, which was great. I was really hoping, most of my analysis was we kind of hinged on this game turning into a like clearing its over under a 49. It did that, obviously. This turned into a pretty fun fantasy game, just a fun game to watch overall. Mm-hmm. 49ers right now, they just have so many ways that they can beat you. Jimmy has one pick in this game, but overall played, relatively clean. There were definitely some moments where it's like, and I think once the 40, like they were trying to do a couple like trick plays. They had one where it's like, Juwan Jennings was throwing a pass there. It's like, what are we doing here? Little lateral back and forth when it's like, let's just maybe throw it to our good players here. And like, I think once they got back to that, that was good to see. Eli Mitchell comes in off an injury from last week. 27 carries, 133 yards. Debo Samuel, by the way, it is worth mentioning Debo Samuel got banged up in this game. It sounds like he is going to have an MRI tomorrow to evaluate the groin injury that he suffered. Dalvin Cook also having an MRI tomorrow, so it is an MRI heavy game we got going on here. But point is, you look at this team and like, Brandon Ayuk leads the team in receiving, 3 catches, 91 yards on a team high, tied with Elijah Mitchell, team high, 6 targets. Debo Samuel, it's going to be like the positional eligibility war to end all positional eligibility wars with old Debo Samuel there, who has one catch in this game, and he's still like a top 5 receiver on the week because he runs 6 times for 66 yards and scores twice. And, George Kittle didn't pop up for a big game in this one, but it's like, the 49ers are just playing the way they want to play right now. Like, this is how the offense was supposed to look with Jimmy Garoppolo back there. And it was good enough to get a win. It was good enough to get a lot of these guys home for fantasy outside of Kittle.
It was interesting during FFL when we were fielding questions about Eli Mitchell. And obviously during the actives and inactives portion of the show, the quote from Kyle Shanahan that I read was that they found a way to protect Eli Mitchell's finger from being further injured in this game. And I rolled my eyes because I did not anticipate that the way that you protect a running back's finger is by turning a wide receiver into a running back and having him lead the backfield.
I mean, I guess Eli Mitchell still got 27 carries. So they found, they let Debo do the work early. They gave him a couple like more quarters to get that finger healthy. I guess that's it. On the other side too, Adam Thielen continues to score touchdowns. Justin Jefferson gets 83 yards. Like, you know how this Minnesota offense works. Alexander Mattison obviously will be like a top 12 RB play next week if Dalvin Cook has to miss time. And it wouldn't be a recap of this game without how fitting that Kirk Cousins, who with Washington, not with Kyle Shanahan. Remember the Kirk Cousins, like, he took a knee at the end of the halftime when Jay Gruden, or like against the Eagles. You remember that? He took a knee instead of like using a timeout or spiking the ball when they were playing the Eagles years and years ago. And Jay Gruden was like, they asked him, why did Kirk Cousins take that knee there? And he's like, I don't know. And he's like, I don't know why he did that. And in this game, Kirk Cousins tried to take a snap from his right guard. He's literally, and like everyone else on the offense is like, there are a couple times Justin Jefferson was very much like channeling his inner Stephon Diggs with like throwing his hands up at old Kirk Cousins there, especially on that one. He tried to take a freaking snap from his right guard. Everybody else like is coming up, running backs coming up to him like, no. Like, oh man. And that, and it was a big moment to end that game. So a couple tough look moments for Kirk Cousins in this one, but it, at least it turned into a pretty good fantasy bonanza. That's for sure.
I don't want to just skim over the Dalvin Cook injury news. I feel like a lot of times we see Cook go down and we hold our breath and then he miraculously pops back up. But this was a shoulder injury. He was emotional when he was carted off. There were tears coming down his face. And it's a shoulder issue. And let's not forget that he dealt with shoulder issues, both left and right shoulders, in 2019. So it is an area of, you know, potential vulnerability for him.
I mean, listen, both of these guys, Deebo Samuel, also has a long injury history. Deebo looked pretty emotional.
No groins, though, I looked.
Good to know. But he was pretty emotional when he got to, but by the time like the game was over, he was like yucking it up on the sidelines, all smiles. It's like, must be good. So who knows? We'll see what happens with the MRI. But both these guys obviously have injury histories.
So, Matt, after dropping two games and coming off a bye, the Rams didn't just not cover, they lost 28-36 against the Packers, who were incredibly banged up. We all know about Aaron Rodgers' toe. He showed it to everyone. Pat McAfee talked about it a whole bunch. We know about that issue. Aaron Jones, we know, is banged up. We know Alan Lazard, despite playing, was banged up. And still, Green Bay gets it done. Aaron Rodgers passes for over 300 yards and 2 touchdowns. Great. You know, I think we can expect Davante Adams goes for over 100 yards. And then I think the unexpected, maybe the surprise, was that A.J. Dillon carried the backfield with 20 carries. So not just a pretty even split, like a 16-11 split, yeah. 20 carries to Aaron Jones's 10. He managed 69 rushing yards. Also, this is why you and I projected Dillon so highly the past couple of weeks. Converts all 5 of his looks for 21 receiving yards and finds the end zone through there.
Yeah, he's been awesome as a receiver. Yeah. Super efficient all season. Like, he bangs old Taylor Rapp into, like, another zip code at the end of that game.
Old Taylor Rapp. He's in his, like, second or third year.
I mean, I don't mean literally old. You know what I mean. That's not, but like, it's one of those things where like, I just want to see more of AJ Dillon. Obviously I want Aaron Jones to be healthy. Like, Aaron Jones is a great player, but it's like, good God, the thighs, the quads, the whole thing. Like, let's just see more. Sky's out, thighs out for old AJ Dillon. Let's just see more of that guy. I just love a big back, in December. That's going to be a fun end of season run for AJ Dillon there. Yeah, no, I think the Packers, look, in the what's old is new again theme, Randall Cobb had a goof moment on special teams, but he did rip off a big play here as well. You know, MVS makes a long catch as well, 28-yard catch for him. You mentioned Davante Adams. Like, the Packers just are who they are. And, like, you know, they lose Aaron Jones. They sub in this – I mean, it's a tough look for everybody that panned the A.J. Dillon pick. And there were a lot of folks out there that laughed at the A.J. Dillon pick. But, like, guy's been crucial for their team this year. And I think he's going to be crucial for fantasy teams, too, like, to end the year. I don't think that when Jones gets back, like, I wouldn't be surprised. And I maybe you disagree. I would not be surprised if A.J. Dillon leads this team in rush attempts the rest of the year.
I don't know if he'll lead it, but I definitely think he has earned himself a larger role than prior to Aaron Jones's injury. And we know that because we've watched Matt LaFleur make all of the backfields that he's coached a timeshare, whether it was 60-40 or 70-30. I mean, I think we're probably looking at closer to a 50-50 timeshare. We also have to know, and we won't know this as media, right? This is an inside the building only kind of known fact, how hurt Aaron Jones is. And if the Packers are looking at a postseason run, we might see A.J. Dillon, who has been playing so well, have a larger role to get through the season so they can save Jones for the playoffs.
Yeah, which is why it was surprising that he played today at all. I'm not about to suggest that Aaron Jones is going to be the Deion Lewis to A.J. Dillon and Derrick Henry. But I think that I like your theory about, like, kind of resting Aaron Jones, even if he continues to play, because he clearly wants to play. I just, you know, if they, like, use Dylan to grind out wins to get to the playoffs, and then like we see Aaron Jones fully healthy there. That wouldn't be surprising to me.
I think it's worth the risk, right? A lot of the guys don't want to gain rust. Like, they want to be out there even on a limited basis just to kind of, we've talked about how running back is such a position of rhythm, right? To be able to keep that going in their entire, not just physical body, but mentally as well, not forget the speed of the game and the feel of it. On the Rams side of things, Cooper Kupp does not find the end zone, but who cares? He gives you an over 90 yards, 7 of 10. You can't complain. I know a lot of people
almost
were chirping.
Almost threw a touchdown.
Yeah, almost threw a touchdown. That's right. A lot of fantasy Twitter was chirping in the first half of the game about him not being present enough. Well, he shows up, calm down. I do think this is an interesting moment for OBJ. 10 ties Cooper Kupp in terms of targets with 10 looks. Catches 5 of them, 81 and a touchdown. I mean, I feel pretty good about that. I have to say, like, pause, side note. I don't know how you feel about Thanksgiving break in the, like, timeline of the season, because this is always, like, an interesting, like, you look at your seasonal teams, your redraft teams, and you're like, I don't know, man. I'm just going to, like, I'm tired. I'm opting out. My, especially in a year like this where the parity is so insane. Maybe everyone just needed a palate cleanser, and that palate cleanser included poultry and cranberry sauce to kind of get back on track. That's kind of how I felt. Like, when I saw OBJ, I was like, all right, I think he's going to flirt with 70 yards. Maybe he'll find the end zone. That makes sense to me. And it was really affirming to see him put up this game.
Yeah, and was just playing a ton. You mentioned the targets, but, like, was on the field for almost 100% of the snaps early on in this game. So, you know, that's going to be crucial. Like, I think Van Jefferson, who is going to be a little more volatile. He did get 9 targets, but 3 catches, 93 yards, obviously at the 79-yard touchdown. And he was the recipient of the almost Cooper Kupp touchdown there. 1 foot down, we would have had quite a play there for Van Jefferson. But Jefferson, OBJ, Cooper Kupp, like, I think you're probably starting these guys every single week. Like, this is exactly what you wanted to see for Beckham. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not trying to, like, yada yada the Rams 3-game losing streak, because, like, you don't want to lose 3 games in a row, especially when, like, oh, you're playing good teams now. And, you know, it's not as easy to just do what you want against them. Like, you know, you go beat the bricks off the damn Giants. Like, good for you. Have a flower for that. But, I mean, you know, you play 3 good teams in a row, you drop 3. But the offense looked, I think, much better in this game. You know, some of the numbers came late, all that stuff. But this was a competitive game throughout. The most tilting thing was, like, Sean McVay, like, doing a little, like, draw on 3rd and 1 and then kicking a field goal immediately. He's like, buddy, the in-game management stuff for Sean McVay is pretty tough. But I think from a fantasy perspective, like, Daryl Henderson, 16 carries, 55 yards, does catch 4 passes and scores. Like, you know, he's still an RB2 play, and all these guys in the passing game are every week starters, except I do think it's kind of like, let's play taps for Tyler Higbee. I think we're done with that one.
Well, next week, the Rams should be able to bounce back because they are hosting the Jaguars at SoFi.
Ah, well, I mean, hey, 54-3 win. But they'll beat the snot out of the Jaguars. Like I said earlier, Jaguars. Well, I mean,
in a world, though, as you're saying that, Matt, like, in a world where there are so few set it and forget it guys, how thankful are you for Daryl Henderson? You know, like, yes, he's an RB2, but maybe some days he'll give you RB1 numbers, because the RB1s are, I mean, unless you're Joe Mixon, who's carrying the ball 30 damn times a game, they don't exist.
Yeah, I mean, maybe this is because I'm, you know, Liz, I'm 30 now, but, like, I'm trying to see some of these teams establish the run a little more. Like, maybe I'm getting old, but I mean,
it's like the pendulum swing we talked about last week.
Yeah, no, I mean, Daryl Henderson, let's run the ball a little more, LA Rams. I kind of think, you know, and I know that some of this was, like, people made jokes about this, but, like, on Twitter this week, because there's a few other people that suggested, I don't hate the idea of, like, let's bring back some of those old Jared Goff Rams offense plays. Like, I think they got a little too cute, a little too, you know, like, oh, look at all this new drop back stuff we can do. But it's like, let's get Matthew Stafford involved with some of these, you know, some of these boot action plays, some of these layups used to give Jared Goff there. I think that would actually be beneficial. Of course, the biggest question is, like, you know, I was a little worried about the pregame report that we got with Matthew Stafford, that, like, his elbow and his bad back, you know, because as you know, Liz,
ain't nobody never had a bad back.
No.
Oh, I messed it up. Ain't nobody never used to have a bad back.
No. It's been 4 years of this. Ain't nobody used to have a bad back. I mean, it is like an absurd amount of double, triple, quadruple negatives in there. So I don't blame you, but that part of it is a little, and the elbow situation was a little nervous, but still, I think the Rams offense will be fine. I think the Rams will be fine. It'll be all right.
That seems like a PR leak. If it's chronic pain, he's been dealing with it all year.
It's a good point.
I don't know. I feel
although
like
you know, I don't know if from a PR angle, you might not want to leak. Like, yeah, this guy's been banged up. We haven't had him on the injury report, but he's been banged up. That seems like you get yourself a little.
No, I feel, but I don't know. I feel like managers leak that stuff or decide when they're going to leak that stuff. I mean, we've seen it with OBJ, and it makes allowance for excuses, or it makes them look like heroes. Big Ben plays that card all the time, right? When he comes in and wins something.
Big Ben's his own big old walking PR department, so we know that.
Well, he needs one after this week. We said that the Rams are hosting the Jags next week. Let's talk about the Falcons, who beat the Jags this week, and particularly Cordarrelle Patterson in his return from injury. 16 carries, 108 yards, 2 touchdowns. Please don't make me do this with Deebo Samuel and the positional eligibility conversation we just had, but my goodness, it does feel good to see him return in such a dominating way.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, there were definitely a positional eligibility war with old Cordarrelle Patterson a few years ago. But he's like the most important player to the Falcons, right? Like, they looked like a lifeless team against the Patriots. I mean, lifeless.
But he's still not doing enough to help Kyle Pitts, which is particularly concerning, right? Because the argument against Kyle Pitts is that when you look at how he was starting to come on with Calvin Ridley on the field, there wasn't as much defensive attention on him. And then he hasn't really had a great game since Calvin Ridley took his time away from the team. So the thought was like, well, Cordarrelle Patterson, at least, you know, if he's being used as a receiver, changes every week, but he adds like another dimension or wrinkle to this offense. And that makes it less predictable through the air. So that should allow Pitts some breathing room. And yet again, 6 targets, happy with the volume, 2 catches, 26 yards, not happy with the production.
Yeah, I think the problem with Pitts is just that he's too easy to take away right now. I mean, he's a rookie. That's problematic enough. But, you know, it's like you're going to let Russell Gage, you're going to let Olamide Zaccheaus, you're going to let those guys do their thing. And, like, Patterson is just tough to take away because, you know, he's had been being used more as a receiver. And then in this game, 16 carries for 100 yards and 2 touchdowns on the ground. Obviously, he gets a couple of looks through the passing game as well, but I mean, it was mostly rushing work. So it's just from a defensive perspective, you know, especially because they line up Pitts so much as a non-traditional tight end. Like, he's not a hand in the dirt tight end. Like, I think it being a perimeter player, like as much as he is, kind of stinks for Kyle Pitts because he's just as easy. It's so much easier to, like, people do this all the time. It's like, well, why can't teams just double Cooper Kupp? Why can't teams just double Deebo Samuel? It's like, well, those guys are moving all over the damn formation. Like, it's so much easier to, like, just line up a couple, like, double team or, you know, shade coverage to a number one X receiver. And, like, that's kind of how the Falcons would be using Kyle Pitts. Like, I think they could benefit from moving him around a little more.
We'll see if they do that. They have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers next week, so
that's not a deal.
Okay. Let's talk about the Bengals. We talked about Joe Mixon. He carries the ball 28 times. He's averaging 30 touches a week. I don't think we need to have a conversation about it, but I do think we need to have a conversation about T. Higgins because
finally,
We've seen the value. We've wanted, you know, but he just hasn't ROI'd. Andy talked about how he was concerned during FFL. I was concerned. I mean, I thought every week I'm like in DFS, like, yeah, I'm going to buy the dip. And then it doesn't turn out. Finally, turns out 6 of 8 for 114 and a touchdown. I have to imagine, like, you know, this is the benefit of having, if we're talking about options when we were discussing Atlanta, Joe Burrow has options. And so, okay, you want to take away Ja'Marr Chase, as difficult as that may be, because he always can surprise or he can rip off a long run and find the end zone. But, like, you know, he's kind of like the Cooper Kupp version for the Bengals. But then you got T. Higgins, and we know he can be a red zone presence. And so Joe Burrow decides to find him on a day that it was harder to target Chase.
Yeah, I mean, number one part of the thesis of the Chase pick was just, look at how it's going to open up the rest of this offense. Like, you know, being a vertical threat, you know, an actual vertical threat, not like whatever AJ Green was doing last year. Like, that's going to open up the rest of this offense. Obviously, it's going to open things up for Joe Burrow as a passer. You know, it's going to help these other guys. And, you know, shout out to TJ Hernandez on the DFS show this week. Is just like, you know, he brought up T. Higgins and you know, he just was imploring, like, because I think I went, as soon as he brought up T. Higgins, like, oh, God, again?
Right.
And, right. And he's like, that's the exact sentiment why, yes, you continue to buy on T. Higgins, because obviously the public will continue to will just start to get tired and frustrated of the whole trust the process thing. But the process has been there for T. Higgins, you know, the target share, the air yard share, the red zone target share. Like, those things are all pretty close with old Ja'Marr Chase. So, like, it's all the indicators have been there. I know it can be so irritating in fantasy football to, like, continue to roll out a guy and have analysts or, you know, even your own self just keep saying, like, but the process, like, the indicators are there, and it doesn't happen for your fantasy team. But, like, especially for good players, like, it's one thing if I'm telling you, like, oh, the indicators are there for Nick Westbrook Akita and Chester Rogers. Right. It's like, whatever. But, like, T. Higgins, we know, is a good player. So to trust the indicators in the process for guys like that.
Well, the targets have certainly been there for Jaylen Waddle as well. I mean, he's averaging, let's see, had 9 last week, 6 the week before, 10, 12. But and he's been fairly efficient. It's just not – the YPR hasn't been there. The touchdown equity hasn't been there. He did rush in a touchdown last week, but he today put together a career effort. He's a rookie, so congratulations. 9 of 10, nicely efficient, 137 yards and a touchdown. This is another player in DFS that I was like – should I do it? I know I'm probably going to get, you know, over 6 catches and maybe he'll flirt with 80 yards, but I don't know if he's going to find the end zone. And so I didn't do it. And yet, here we go. And, you know, the matchup, we know that the Panthers are certainly struggling through the air.
57 yard catch and run for Jaylen Waddle. Like, this is literally, that was literally the play. I think I was sitting here in, I think I was at the office at that point. Who knows where I was? I was like, there it is. I think I said, like, there it is. That's what that is, the play I've been waiting for all year. Like, when you look at Miami's offense, they're like in their own zip code when it comes to play action rate. You know, they're almost, like, I think they're over 40% of their plays, like, are play action, because they use so much RPO stuff. And, like, I think because they've been calling plays that way, so RPO heavy, combined with two quarterbacks, more so Jacoby Brissett than Tua, but two quarterbacks who can be a little overly conservative, and then also a bad offensive line. I think all those ingredients have baked together in a situation where we have seen Jaylen Waddle's yards per reception not really be there, because he's been the target on those, like, quick hitters or whatever. But, like, Liz, we know he's got the juice to break some big plays. Like, I think, and just the guy I'm saying, like, I'm going to say the best is yet to come for Jaylen Waddle, like, 2022 and beyond. This is still a guy who's pacing for 100 catches. Like, we know he's an every week fantasy starter, but I still think, like, man, a lot of potential for Jaylen Waddle going forward.
Miami has ripped off 4 in a row, 4 wins in a row. Yeah. A couple of tomato cans in there, the Texans, but then the Ravens. That was a great game. Legit the wins, Jets, though. The Panthers.
Yeah, they're legit. Those, especially, I think, yeah, right. You're right. Like, New York and Houston, congratulations. Here's, like, pin a rose on your nose for that one. But, like, Baltimore and Carolina, like, those were two really good defensive game plans, and I think show that, okay, the secondary is healthy. They're mixing things up on defense. Like, they're just blitzing the F out of teams like Baltimore, and they did a little bit with Carolina today too. You know, that defense coming back alive. And then, so listen, when Tua's back there instead of Brissett, they are a different team. Like, Tua can run a damn offense. Like, he can actually add some things to the table here. Like, Tua's a guy that, as the situation gets better, he should get better. And I think he is, from, like, a mental standpoint, continuing to get better. Cause when you're, I don't know, I don't need to get into the whole Tua discussion right now, but, like, long story short, Miami's not a joke of a team anymore.
I know, and they're hosting the Giants in week 13. So, I mean, should be able to hold it down. you mentioned the Dolphins defense surging, obviously getting healthier, blitzing. Cam Newton got scrambled by this Dolphins defense, got benched. Yeah. Passed for 92 yards. He did rush in a touchdown. So, you know,
yeah, that's feeling pretty good about old Cam Newton early.
So where are you at on Cam Newton watch? Because you were his biggest supporter heading into last week.
I think that this was the first week where I was like, ooh, that looks like a guy who just joined this roster less than a month ago. You know, like that looked like a guy who wasn't, who had just been dropped into the middle of, you know, behind enemy lines in the middle of the season. And look, some of those passes downfield were ugly, but they did say he's going to continue to start. I think there's no question that that's going to continue to be the case. But yeah, some of the passes trying to push it downfield, not the prettiest. Say that.
I did briefly. I mean, the conspiracy theory that I cooked up does not check out because of the division that the Dolphins play in. But I did kind of wonder if Coach Flo called Bill Belichick and was like, give me some notes. Just...
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe. Give me a little something. And I don't know. But I think more importantly, that's just a silly little conspiracy theory trying to find wrinkles in narratives. It's a fun thing to do. It doesn't mean anything else. But I think, moreover, this Dolphins defense, people need to stop looking at the fantasy points allowed in the full season and start looking at,
I agree,
since they started to get healthy, what everything means. Do you want to talk about the Jets? I mean, like, Zach Wilson came back. He got sacked 4 times. Lord have mercy. This poor child, he's the boy, baby boy Zach. You know, it was Tevin Coleman, not Ty Johnson, who led the backfield in carries. Woohoo! It is nice that the Jets are able to pull off a quote upset, for whatever that's worth, over the Texans. But I don't think, other than Elijah Moore, who does not find the end zone but does lead the receiving corps in looks with 8, the efficiency remains an issue with Wilson because he only catches 50% of those opportunities. It's just like, it's all gross.
Tough scene for the Jets.
I mean, they win, so no one's going to talk about it. But for fantasy, I like, it's gross.
Well, I mean, listen, just the whole Zach Wilson thing is, I guess I had thought, like, man, maybe, you know, there were reports like during the bye week or during Zach Wilson's stretch of absences here that they really like tried to sit down with him and like rework his fundamentals, rework his approach to the game. And then you still get a situation where he's like flinging the ball into Ty Johnson's back as he's like almost scrambled beyond the line of scrimmage. Like, there's just some,
he's scared. Like, that is there is a difference. This was remember the scouting note was that, yes, like, he's not going to have the protection that he had as a Cougar in the NFL. And when Mekhi Becton goes down the first minute, then everything changes. And he's not fully healthy. There was a report last week that he didn't have full confidence in his knee. But the other two bozos are on the COVID list, so he's got to go out there. And he's not feeling – I mean, of course he's terrified. I'd be scared, too.
And I think the number one thing, too, is, like, it's tough to change the stripes of a guy. And the biggest problem with Zach Wilson, too, is that, like, most of his big plays, you know – When he was forced out, like, he was a guy who could make big plays out of structure, right?
In space, in protected space, wide open, Dixie Chicks level spaces.
But I think the problem, too, is, like, yes, the wide open space is part of it, but also, like, he's not, like, when he's doing the out of structure stuff at the NFL, like, he's not Lamar Jackson. Like, he's not Kyler Murray. He's not, like, an elite athlete, you know? It's just... I don't think we'll see I'd be nervous about Zach Wilson if I was a Jets fan, but I'd also like try to tell myself a story that, like, okay, maybe in 2022, once he's like used to the league and like has the protection, we'll see. But yeah, it's a bummer for Elijah Moore, who is like a bona fide superstar. He's open on every play. It's just not going to really be as good with Zach Wilson out there.
Let's move along to the Monday night preview. Russell Wilson used to be hyper-athletic. We haven't really seen that version of him over the past few weeks. He's traveling to the Washington football team to take on a quarterback who may not be, quote, hyper-athletic, but is averaging 28 rushing yards per game. So that's interesting. I love Taylor Heineke, by the way. Like, I love – oops, I forgot. I didn't call him the pride and joy of ODU. That's your job.
The pride of ODU football. Let's go.
Who, from a DFS perspective, are you most interested in investing in?
I mean, like, almost anybody, basically. Obviously, Terry.
Well,
McLaurin.
We need tears, friend.
Tears. Okay. Well, it's been a lot of tears watching Russell Wilson play football lately.
Oh, look at that!
Nailed it. I think even though, like, the pride of Lynchburg, Virginia, Logan Thomas looks like he's coming back off IR. Curtis Samuel might even play. I still think, like, Terry McLaurin's your core play here. Even Antonio Gibson, like, I really – where are we at with Antonio Gibson? Like, you know, we talked the week before, like, okay, 24 carries, wasn't that efficient against Tampa Bay. Then last game, I guess 19 carries was very efficient against Carolina. Like, they're still listing him on the injury report with the whole shin thing. But, like, I think he's kind of at a point where we're feeling pretty good about old Antonio Gibson. And the Seahawks have been crushed by running backs most of this year. I think Gibson is in contention as the superstar pick here. And then on Seattle's side, like, you know what to do. It's Lockett and DK and log out. Like, I'm not messing around with any of these other guys here.
No. I don't want to answer any.
I'm not messing around with the running backs either. Like, well, yeah, what are we doing? It's like, I saw somebody, I didn't respond because I forgot, but I saw somebody tweeted us after the show, like, hey, I missed the show. Was DJ Dallas discussed? And I was like, not one time.
Thankfully.
We took a lot of Alex Collins questions, and I think Andy said it perfectly. He's like, you know, you're going to get your 11 carries for 44 yards out of Alex Collins. Yeah.
Antonio Gibson, I just want to touch on quickly because I do think that sometimes, again, at this point in the season, I feel like people have to play DFS. Like, if you want to be better at redraft, you have to play DFS because it forces you to evolve on a week-to-week basis with the league, which does not, as we've discussed numerous times, particularly this season, stay still. So there's a take lock, I think, sometimes in redraft when you hear about Antonio Gibson's shin and you're like, oh, he's gimpy. Like that. No, he's not. Because last week, you know, maybe someone sees the regression. Well, guess what? There's a regression from 2 touchdowns in week 10. But then in week 11, he averages 5 yards per carry. Okay, 95 yards on 19 carries. That shows me that the shin is becoming less and less of an issue. And so he's becoming more and more explosive. And as you mentioned, when we put him in a plus matchup, we're not as afraid as we were before when we're thinking that Jarrett Patterson is going to be the answer at some point.
I agree with that. And I think you said it perfectly. Like, everybody that plays redraft should play daily fantasy, especially because it forces you out of the whole, like, never again with Antonio Gibson. He burned me. It's like, you can't afford to play that BS when you play daily fantasy because, like, the whole board is available to you. And, like, when these guys start becoming values, you want to attack at a certain salary. I think Gibson's in that range. And, you know, it's just, I do think these offenses, even with some of the guys coming back for Washington, like, they are concentrated units, which is a good thing. Straight up, Russ or Taylor Heinicke, who's going to score more points this week?
I'll take Heinicke.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree. You still got to, like, rank Russ highly and all that stuff, but good God, it's just.
Taylor Heinicke has Terry McLaurin. But Russ has two bona fide studs at wide receiver. And even though you've got, as you mentioned, Samuel and Thomas, like, coming back, like, how healthy are they? At what level is their rust build up? And I just think that Russ Wilson has better weapons at his disposal. But I'll take Heinicke's rushing upside over Wilson's right now in his career.
Not wrong. I mean, Russ is – you always wondered what Russ would look like within the Seahawks offense when he couldn't immediately go to that, like, improv stuff. Well, let me tell you what.
Ta-da.
Past me, it looks bad.
How did you like on UPod to win the game? There was that clip over FFL, and Charles and Frank were, like, mulling whether or not Russ would go to Cleveland. And all I could think was, there is no way that Sierra is living in Ohio. Like, no, it is not going to happen.
You said this about the Pittsburgh rumors as well.
Yeah. It's not going to happen. She's not going to move there. And if people want, like, a precedent, go take a look at Lala Anthony and Carmelo. He played in Denver and she was like, nah, I'm moving to New York. This is not the market for me. They're not married anymore, but that's not part of the discussion. I'm just saying I would be stunned. I could see Denver though, like Sierra headlining at Red Rocks or whatever. I could see Vegas. I don't see Ohio. Anyway, if we're having a conversation right now, if you want to keep this conversation or another conversation, any conversation basically that isn't about Seattle's backfield going, you can do that on Twitter. And you should make sure to follow me at @LizLoza_FF. You can follow Matt at @MattHarmon_BYB. While you're at it, go ahead and double check that you're following at Yahoo Fantasy. For a different angle on Sunday's games, you can listen to Charles Robinson and Frank Schwab, who I just mentioned, in the most recent episode of UPod to win the game. You should definitely subscribe to it. And make sure you come back tomorrow to this podcast for the very special pickups pod with Andy and Scott and Alexander Madison. If you can pick him up, but good luck, I doubt it. Until then, we're out.